They say while it was Daesh which claimed responsibility for the terrorist attack, the U.S. and its regional ally Israel are actually behind these atrocities.
Daesh is created by the U.S. Former U.S. President Donald Trump once said that Obama was the founder of Daesh. They have caused disasters in the country for more than 40 years, but our people are still standing for the Islamic Revolution. Are they blind? How did they not see this?
Israel and the U.S. have a long history of hostility against the Iranian people. Wednesday terrorist attacks in Kerman were an obvious proof of that, as they've been supporting different terrorist groups, including Daesh, in the region.
Daesh?
Daesh couldn't do this by itself. It has a supporter. Their supporters are the U.S. and Israel.
Mothers were among those taking part in the rally. I asked them how they felt when they saw the dead bodies of innocent people as the attack occurred on Mother's Day in Iran.
There's no doubt that Israel and the U.S. were behind this horrific terrorist attack. It hurts every human being's feeling when on Mother's Day they see a mother killed while holding her baby.
During the rally, people also mourned for a 20-year-old girl named Faizeh Rahimi. Faizeh was a student who was killed in the attack. Iranian students of all ages were participating in the rally to show their support for martyrs like Faizeh.
Imam Khomeini once said, "Kill us, but our nation will become more awakened."
Western-backed terrorist attacks in Iran have mainly targeted popular backing for the Islamic Republic, but the people say they will continue to support the establishment and hold heroes like martyr Qasem Soleimani in their hearts. Farzan Ashuryan, Tehran.
Yemen has resumed its military operations in the Red Sea by targeting another Israeli-linked ship traveling to occupied Palestine. The latest attack comes just 2 days after a U.S. Navy helicopter killed 10 Yemeni naval soldiers while patrolling the Red Sea. The spokesman for Yemen's armed forces stated that the U.S. attacks did not and will not stop Yemen's military operations against Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that maritime shipping is open in the Red Sea and in the Arabian Sea to the entire world except for the ports in the occupied Palestine. We also confirmed that any acts of aggression from the U.S. will not pass by without punishment and retaliation. We also warned the American enemy and any other nation of transgression by protecting any shipments heading to the Israeli entity.
The Yemeni public has praised the army's military efforts against Israel.
Today we targeted an Israeli ship because they are prohibited from the Red Sea. We will eventually march into occupied Palestine so we can get revenge for all the martyrs. America will not be able to protect Israel. We will continue to target them.
Although the U.S. and other Western nations have urged the Yemeni government to end its continuous military operations in the Red Sea, many Yemenis believe that the blockade of Israeli shipments should continue until the genocide in Palestine.
We prepare for jihad against the enemies from land, air, and sea. We've already endured 10 years of war, blockade, and all types of struggles. Therefore, the time has come for us to retaliate because their blood is not worth more than ours, or the blood of a Palestinian child who is dying of hunger and being burned by Israeli bombs and missiles. Therefore, retaliation is coming.
What is clear is that the U.S. will continue to support Israel, even if it means starting another war in West Asia. Yemen's Ansarullah movement had previously stated they are ready to take America on directly. Yemen has vowed to retaliate against the U.S. military presence in the Red Sea for the killing of the 10 Navy Yemeni personnel. They have also vowed to continue to target Israeli-linked ships and the ships of any nation that joins the U.S. in its hostile actions against Yemen. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
A mixed feeling of joy and sorrow has overshadowed the occupied West Bank town of Harura.
the hometown of the late deputy chief of Hamas political bureau, Saleh al-Arouri, who was assassinated along with six others in Beirut, Lebanon, on Tuesday night. Here in this home, Sheikh Saleh al-Arouri was raised. He spent 18 years in Israeli jails before he was deported from Palestine to Lebanon. His old mother always believed that he would eventually be assassinated by those she described as cowards.
I saw him 20 years ago. He used to speak to me over the phone, but not a lot, and now he's killed. He expected to be killed. He told me that. He spent 15 years behind bars. He then was released and got married, but he was arrested again for 3 more years, and then they deported him. Those cowards sent him away, and then they killed him.
Sheikh Saleh hoped to be a martyr, and in all of his interviews, he said that he's not more precious than the children of Gaza. All the Palestinians should be proud. We congratulate ourselves on Sheikh Saleh's martyrdom. And even if he's martyred, Palestine and the cause and our resistance will always live, and people will continue the struggle.
The family of Sheikh Saleh welcomed Palestinian mourners who were also congratulating them on the martyrdom of their son. The vast majority of the Palestinians, not only Hamas supporters, viewed Sheikh Saleh a national hero who spared no effort throughout his life to help Palestinians.
Thank God, my brother, Martyr Saleh, was a Mujahid fighter who spent his life for the sake of the homeland. He spent years behind bars and then in exile. He suffered a lot behind bars in isolation and torture. But he was a hero, and he was murdered. We ask Allah to grant him the highest ranks in heaven. Despite all the threats, he always insisted on keeping up his position.
Meanwhile, a general strike was observed across the occupied West Bank on Wednesday to mourn the assassination of Saleh al-Arouri. Palestinian factions had called for joint action, as well as the protest rallies holding Israeli regime fully responsible for the killing. Palestinians across the occupied territories are mourning the loss of their national hero, Sheikh Saleh al-Arouri, and his companions. But sad Palestinians at the same time insist that the Israeli regime might assassinate their beloved leaders, but cannot kill the Palestinian resistance against the occupation and atrocities. Mona Qandil from the town of Arura, north of occupied Ramallah.
As a result of the threats by the Israeli occupation forces, thousands of the Palestinian families have collected only the most necessary of their belongings before leaving their houses in Al-Burayj, Al-Nusrawat, and Al-Maghazi refugee camps. Similar to the other families who were previously displaced from Gaza City and the northern parts of the blockaded strip, these families have no place to go but the schools, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, and the surrounding vacant areas in Deir el-Balah City. The neighborhood has now turned into an overcrowded city of tents.
We were living in our house before we were forcibly expelled by Israeli threats. Now we are homeless, living in this shattered tent that has no roof, no floor, no walls, and no bathroom. Our life is miserable. We, mostly women, girls, and children, are cramped in this small tent with no access to the basic humanitarian needs. We are suffering from unbearable conditions and the Israeli strikes.
The family of Dima Maslih was among those lucky families who could find a place in the surrounding areas of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. 10 members, including the parents, their children, and a paralyzed aunt, are crammed in a small tent that provides no cover or protection from rain or the freezing cold weather. It's needless to mention their daily struggle to find food to eat or water to drink.
Actually, I'm a refugee here in El Deir camp. Now, as you see, I'm in a tent with 9 families. You know how much in 9 families there's like more than 10 people in every family. And we live like literally with simple materials to live. Like there is no covers, there is no supplies like water, like anything like food or covers. Actually, no one do anything here. They just stare about us and they don't do anything.
Dima is a 21-year-old Palestinian girl. She studies translation in the Al-Azhar University in Gaza. which is now reduced to rubble over the relentless Israeli airstrikes. Like all Gaza students, Dima has her own dreams of completing her college, having a good job, and live a peaceful life in her house. However, the Israeli occupation forces ruined all her dreams, as the vast part of Gaza Strip is transformed into a livable place.
I was in my home. I was just preparing for the college in the morning. Then everything, this war happened. There is no warning. We just run from our home and we go to the school. They say, okay, the UN school is safe. I just wanted to give this message to the whole world. We need to stop this war. We don't need supplies like water and food. Okay, right, we need it, but we need to stop this war. Like, I lost my home. I don't know where I will back.
Dima is another example of the Palestinian student whose life, future, and dreams were ruined by the Israeli regime that has been bombarding the besieged strip for roughly 3 months in a row. This sort of the barbaric bombardment against the besieged strip goes beyond any description in terms of a brutality against civilians. Mota Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
A unifying figure, no doubt, a role model and a symbol of hope, self-confidence and courage. On his fourth martyrdom anniversary, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani is a source of inspiration more than ever. The reason why Tehran University has decided to recognize and reward prominent figures with outstanding works focused on the top commander himself and his way of life as freedom seekers worldwide and in particular resistance fighters in Gaza continue to look up to him and follow in his footsteps.
Today, the occupying Israeli regime and the Americans who were talking about destroying Hamas are sending messages and indirectly negotiating with Hamas about how to manage Gaza after the war and how to exchange prisoners. This all means that the axis of resistance has won this war, and once again resistance has paid off, the resistance that martyr Qasem Soleimani stood up for.
Martyr Soleimani is not just a person. Martyr Soleimani is a school of thought. It's important for us to see the world through his eyes and follow in his footsteps. That is why I've published a book including my research on Martyr Soleimani's leadership style that can be used as a reference for our future leaders. I believe we need more people using his methods and leadership for us to be successful.
The 20 laureates were picked out of a short list of 150 prominent figures who have made great efforts to shed light on the different aspects of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, both as a person and as a hero and the top commander that he was.
Haj Qasem Soleimani is one of the most influential people of our time. In Palestine, and particularly in Gaza, we owe our resistance to him. That is why we call him the martyr of Al-Quds. Young boys and girls in Gaza see him as a role model.
Martyr Soleimani is one of the greatest people in history, a unique person and a true hero. I think he is a great role model for our younger generation, and it's our duty to pass on his teachings to them.
He is very much loved by people all over the world, not just in Iran, but internationally. He is a symbol of resistance against imperialism, against hegemony, against arrogance, against occupation, against apartheid, against genocide. And he continues to fulfill that role years after he was assassinated by the criminal American regime.
In West Asia, many people who are fighting for freedom against global imperialism see their path to victory through his teachings and his way of life. And Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani will continue to be a symbol of resistance for generations to come. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We need peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy, and we feel compelled to express our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city, Islamabad, on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Ceasefire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Huge crowds gathered in Tehran's Grand Masala to commemorate the fourth martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, pledging to follow in his footsteps. High-ranking Iranian officials and a number of foreign dignitaries were also present. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi addressed the ceremony, reiterating that the presence of huge crowds in Tehran and different cities across the country commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of the top commander is a testimony to the fact that his legacy lives on and his school of thought is bearing fruit, not just in Iran, but in the entire region, with many people inspired by the concept of resistance as defined by Haj Qasem.
He's a role model for our society. He's a hero in Iran and in the Muslim world. He's the hero who fought against terrorism in West Asia. He always defended the oppressed. That is why he always stood by Palestine. He stood by Lebanon. He stood by Yemen. He would always find an opportunity in every threat. There is a lot that we can learn from him. He was the man who formed a united and active resistance front in the region. He made all the oppressed people in the region believe that they are capable and strong.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani redefined resistance, breathing new air into the resistance front. And this is considered the most fundamental part of Haj Qasem's legacy, and the reason why so many people in the region, and particularly Palestinians, look up to him, and also why he is known as the martyr of Al-Quds. The top commander's legacy lives on, with more and more people taking part in his martyrdom anniversary every year.
On the fourth martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, huge crowds gathered at Tehran's Grand Masala to pledge allegiance to the top commander and the values he stood up for. Hisham Shahmadi, Tehran.
In the limelight.
Experts are saying poverty, mental health, and housing crisis have flamed the fire of homelessness in the United States. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us.
We'll be right back.
The Associated Press has covered this story and tells us more. The number of homeless people in the United States soared to its highest level since 2007, as high costs of living pushed some of the most vulnerable Americans into shelters and onto the streets. According to a headcount conducted for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, homelessness shot up by more than 12% this year, reaching 653,000 people. It said the numbers represent the sharpest increase and largest unhoused population since the federal government began tallying totals in 2007. The report said 4 out of 10 homeless people are in places not meant for human inhabitants, where the population and sheltered people are particularly at risk of violence and criminalization. The states of California, New York, Florida, and Washington are facing the largest population of homeless people. The Department of Housing and Urban Development said, unlike in years past, the spike in U.S. homelessness was driven by increasing among all populations and demographics, including unhoused families with children and unhoused veterans. The data comes months after the federal government found the United States is facing growing rates of poverty and food insecurity. In 2022, the most recent year for which data is available, more than 12% of the nation was living below the poverty line, and nearly 13% said they didn't have enough to eat. Ann Oliver, the chief executive officer of the National Alliance to End Homelessness, said the United States saw such a sharp increase this year because more people are becoming unhoused faster and more people are becoming homeless for the first time. Ann Oliver said, "That move from a house situation to an unhoused situation is happening more quickly and it's more direct. More folks are reporting and they're showing up in the homeless services system that they're coming directly from a lease." Ann Oliver said homeless services providers have been particularly strained in recent years because more people need help, and at the same time it has been harder to get people housed because housing costs have increased. African Americans account for 37% of all people suffering from homelessness in the United States. Evictions nationwide have been steadily increasing since fall of 2021, when the national eviction moratorium ended. In late 2022, emergency rental assistance from the federal government also stopped. According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development data from 2020 to 2022, the number of people who became homeless for the first time increased by 30%. Experts say poverty, mental health, and housing crisis have flamed the fire of homelessness in the United States. Diane Yentl, president and chief executive officer of the U.S. National Low-Income Housing Coalition, said those renters who once had been stably housed have been forced to re-enter a brutal housing market with skyrocketing rents and high inflation. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a new report, baby boomers in the United States are finding themselves homeless in the ever-increasing numbers, with rising rent prices and soaring medical bills forcing seniors from their homes and onto the streets. Analysts at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development said the fastest-growing segment of the homeless population is people over the age of 65. For the first time this year, the agency will reveal the number of people over the age of 65 in their annual count of homelessness, which is released in late December. Hotspots for senior homelessness include Miami, Denver, and Columbus, Ohio. Hotspots for senior homelessness include Miami, Florida, Denver, Colorado, and Columbus, Ohio, cities on the cusp of what one called a silver tsunami. Many of those who find themselves homeless can't even use shelters, as they are too frail to climb up onto a top bunk that may be the only bed available to them. Dennis Colhane, a University of Pennsylvania social policy professor, said, The fact that we're seeing elderly homelessness is something that we have not seen since the Great Depression. Soaring rent is a big factor, and Florida, with its large population of seniors, is one of the hardest hit states. Florida does not have rent control laws, and an influx of people during the pandemic pushed up housing costs in Florida. Zillow data cited by the Daily Mail showed half of the 20 metro areas analyzed saw the steepest rent increases between January of 2020 and June of 2023 were in Florida. Among those forced from their homes in Florida were Barbara Throckmorton, 65 years old, and her husband, Edward Wynn, 67 years old, who found themselves homeless in Tampa, Florida, in October of 2022. Barbara Throckmorton told the paper her rent check was stolen and they were evicted. She was turned away from a homeless shelter because the only free beds were top bunks, which could not be given to anyone over the age of 60 because of safety concerns. She said they slept on the sidewalk for 2 nights. Throckmorton told the paper she has received about $900 a month in disability payments since she was in a car accident in the 1990s. Her husband, who worked as a contractor, is applying for disability payments as he suffers from osteoporosis and 5 broken ribs. The couple was receiving $280 a month in food stamps but didn't have a refrigerator, requiring them to buy non-perishable foods and ice each day. She thought they would soon be off the streets, but their belongings kept on getting stolen, forcing them to replace them and putting them back to zero. She currently remains on the streets. Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story. The United States has seen the biggest ever spike in homeless people living on the streets, as preliminary figures showed a record 12% increase in 1 year. There are nearly 700,000 rough sleepers across cities and towns in America, and the jump from 2022 to 2023 so far is the highest since the government started tracking the data in 2007. Places like Oakland and San Francisco in California have become hotbeds for homelessness, as people living on the streets are like drug tourists who arrive to have easy access to narcotics. The numbers keep increasing year on year in Los Angeles and in Seattle, Washington. Using data from 300 entities that count the number of homeless people in different vicinities, the Wall Street Journal estimated 653,000 people are sleeping rough so far this year, compared with 577,000 in the whole of 2022. The Department of Housing and Urban Development is expected to publish formal figures this year, but a preliminary study has shown how the issue of crimes, drug abuse, and lack of housing has exacerbated the number of homeless people. And the chronic homeless numbers for 2022, categorized as people who have a disabling condition who have been unhoused for a year or more, was 188,361. This was up from 84,278 in 2021, again thought to be lower than normal due to pandemic counting disruptions. During the pandemic, there were relief programs in places across the United States to ease the burden of housing issues, including eviction bans for renters. But now, with these schemes petering out, homelessness has become a more acute problem. Costs, the lack of available housing are also big issues, as well as the migrant crisis. In city centers like New York, an average of 2,300 migrants from the border arrive weekly, putting a strain on housing and forcing many to sleep on the streets. In recent days, hundreds of people were forced to sleep outside the Roosevelt Hotel in Midtown Manhattan for days while seeking temporary housing facilities. Seneca Scott, founder of Neighbors Together Oakland, told Fox News Channel about the California cities. Oakland and San Francisco have become the promised land of milk and fentanyl, and people are coming here. Seneca Scott added, People who are homeless in Oakland now typically are not from here. They're drug tourists. They're coming here for the safe and easy access to their drug of choice and the ability to also steal to support those habits because there's no rule of law.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. As Israel's genocidal war on Gaza continues with full support from the United States, the two allies have not backed down from carrying out acts of terrorism in the West Asia region. Only in recent days, the Israeli regime has assassinated two important figures of the region's resistance front in operations in Syria and Lebanon. And Washington has also shown its disrespect for other nations' sovereignty by conducting a deadly drone strike on the headquarters of Iraq's popular mobilization units in Baghdad. We'll try to bring to the spotlight the ramifications of Washington and Tel Aviv's acts of terrorism in tonight's show. We have Don DeBar, activist and commentator, joining us from Austin, New York. And academic and commentator Daniel Shaw joining us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. DeBar in Austin. We're going to kick off this segment with the recent terror attack in Kerman. In your opinion, who benefits from such deplorable acts and from attempts of creating this type of insecurity in the region?
I mean, the thing is done on speculation, okay? There's an expectation that this act will create that effect. The question is, of course, who did it and what did they intend? Pretty clear it was the U.S. or Israel, the intent to create instability in Iran, to provide some sort of domestic satisfaction for people in Israel who are looking at Iran through the propaganda, you know, machinery there as an enemy or the enemy. And so, you know, you can tell who benefits basically, if they benefit, by what happens. Well, you know, several things could happen. Iran shows, in fact, that it's a stable country, which it is, and it, you know, hunkers down and deals with the effects of this and makes a counter move that, you know, is satisfactory to the people in Iran, and also a satisfactory lesson, perhaps, of the cost of doing these things to Israel and or the United States. The other is that they're successful and somehow it creates instability in Iran. I doubt that's going to happen, though, because Israel is on a much weaker foundation than Iran. the people of Iran are sitting on land that they've been on, you know, going back to the Persian Empire. And the people of Israel are sitting on land that they've been in since the late 19th century from Europe. And surrounded by enemies that they've created by inserting themselves into the middle of this region. So I don't think the intended effect is going to, you know, express. And I think it's pretty clear who did it and why.
Daniel Shaw, regardless of who was behind this attack, many analysts that we've spoken to here on Press TV see the Israelis as having a role in the terror attacks. And it's not unprecedented, of course, for the Israeli regime. What do you think?
I agree with Mr. Dabar. The same way that U.S. imperialism has used Israel since 1948 as a proxy force to do its dirty work in the area against the Lebanese, against the Syrians, against the Iranians, against the Palestinians, first and foremost, as they carry out a genocide. Likewise, they have used ISIS. Jake Sullivan's infamous quote from 2015 when he said that ISIS were not their the State Department's enemies in Syria. How many times have they, and this is what WikiLeaks and all of those cables, and that's why Julian Assange and others are in exile or in jail, because they were able to shed light on this topic, because what the U.S. wants to try to do with their war propagandists, wipe their hands clean of what happened about some 60 hours ago in Tehran. There's nothing that can convince us that it wasn't the Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency, which has an undisclosed budget. It's an unvouchered budget, meaning they don't have to leave any paper trail for all of their dirty work around the years. A budget somewhere in the range of $50 billion per year for the CIA. And this is right up their alley. They strike one day in Beirut. They strike the next day in Tehran. And then they strike in Baghdad. The arrogance of this empire and of Zionism is almost unparalleled in history.
Don DeBar, looking at the recent Israeli attacks in the region, the assassination of the Iranian military advisor, Sayed Razi Mousavi, in Syria, Hamas senior official Saleh al-Aruri in Lebanon. Are these Israeli attempts at expanding their onslaught on Gaza into a wider regional conflict and maybe trying to get the United States more directly involved?
The individual actors have, you know, their individual motivations. Netanyahu, first of all, has his own personal motivations, which is basically a single one, stay out of prison. He has to stay in office in order to stay out of prison. He is sitting on top of a coalition where he's really not the leading partner, and he's become a liability even to them over his handling of this entire affair. And then there is the interests of the state of Israel, quote unquote, whatever elite that actually is in terms of making and expressing policy. There's certainly the geopolitical interests of the United States, which Israel is a proxy for. It's, they've referred to it as an aircraft carrier and whatever, a battleship. And behind that even, you know, the oil companies, basically, that have a large chunk of the stock of the U.S. government. So we're looking at a war over the resources there and over not just the oil and gas and those resources and not even just the human resources, but also the, you know, the geographic resources. You know, the location itself is an important strategic asset in fighting Russia and China, which is also, you know, part of perhaps their ultimate goal. So looking at how these things are playing out here, clearly you look to what the interests of the U.S. and of Israel as its, you know, local partner are, and how these things fit into it. I think that, again, you consider the fact that there's a war going on, not the war that began, quote-unquote, on October 7th, and not even the war that began with the Nakba in 1948. This is the war that's been going on since imperialism came to that part of the world to try to, and for a long period of time, to have seized the resources or control of the resources there. You're looking at the British changing the form of imperialism in 1948. In the face, though, of Mossadegh coming to power and the Iranian people really taking control of their fate up until the CIA coup in 1953, and then Nasser and first the construction of Egypt and Syria and Iraq, which was coming on, you're going to see a United Arab Republic across the Arab world. Again, another anti-imperialist rise. The war that took all of those things down and then has saw a reversal with the Iranian Revolution in 1979 is ongoing, and this is just another battlefield in that entire, you know, in that larger war.
Right. Mr. Shah, regarding the assassinations, Hezbollah leader Seyed Hassan Nasrallah earlier today said that the blood of the martyrs of the resistance will not go in vain, and he also said that the killing of Saleh al-Aruri will not go unpunished. There were similar comments from Iran regarding the assassination of Razi Mousavi in Syria. Are these actions producing the results that Israel and the U.S. were seeking, or are they, in the words of Hassan Nasrallah, further igniting the resistance front in the region?
First off, it's very clear that Israel is a Western imperialist creation. It's a Frankenstein. But is this Frankenstein slipping out of the control of their very handlers, of the Dr. Frankenstein that called them into existence? It seems that the U.S. does not want the upper summits of the U.S. ruling class. Do they really want a war with Iran, a nation of almost 100 million people, a rich civilization that goes back millennia? They can't handle the economic rise of China. Russia is whipping their behinds in this NATO-U.S. proxy war against Russia with the Ukrainian people trapped in the middle. Do they really want to open up another massive front against the Iranians, against the axis of resistance? But there can be no doubt that there's an Israeli and a U.S. hand behind these terrorist bombings in Tehran. They bomb into Iraq. They bomb into Syria. They bomb the Syrian airports in Aleppo and in Damascus. They bomb the militias, the anti-imperialist militias in Iraq. They bomb at will. So the Israelis and the U.S. are, in a very cavalier way, they're inviting the resistance to strike back. Of course, it's the military-industrial complex that runs the media in this country. And what we saw yesterday at about 2 p.m. was the most synchronized statement from the New York Times and the BBC and the Israeli Times and Haaretz washing their hands clean as if the West had nothing to do with these terrorist bombings. But there's an abundance of proof. We have to read the gray zone, and we have to read Aaron Mate in the geopolitical report and these other outlets who've been tracking ISIS and their handlers from Benghazi in Libya to the ports of Turkey, back through Syria. WikiLeaks revealed this Israeli-U.S. ISIS nexus. Now, yesterday when they made that statement, of course, liberals across the U.S. and everyday U.S. people thought, this is surely a Shiite, Sunni dynamic. But it's important to ask, at the moment of the ultimate Muslim unity, of pan-Arab and Muslim unity in defense of the people of Palestine who are up against the genocide, right, who benefits from this terrorist bombing?
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Don DeBar, the resistance front in Iraq, it continues to put pressure on the U.S. administration with its anti-Israeli and anti-U.S. operations. But Hassan Nasrallah today, earlier, said that following the recent targeting of a leader of the popular mobilization units in Baghdad, Iraqi politicians now have a historic opportunity to expel all U.S. forces from Iraq. Now, let's go rewind to the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani in 2020. Iran also said that one way of avenging his death would be the complete withdrawal of U.S. troops from the region. How close are we to seeing that day?
I forget what the official count is, 2,500, I think, or supposedly. You know, recent events have actually, exposed the fact that the U.S. still occupies Iraq. You know, occupation is a fact, not necessarily, a set of individual situations. For example, if the United States is exercising control at gunpoint of the nation state or policy making of Iraq, whether they have a million troops there or two, the occupation is an occupation. The fact that it's still occupied has been, again, exposed by the recent events there and the attacks on the U.S. Military assets by the Iraqi forces and by the Iraqi people. One of the things that gets sort of obfuscated in conversation about these matters is the word terrorism. I mean, we're talking about warfare, okay? Terrorism is a term that came into usage when there were articles or acts of warfare committed by either non-state actors or by the other in terms of propaganda. In fact, and it's even more complicated given the sort of the political, legal political situation that exists on the ground in that region and in a number of other post-colonial regions. You have contradictions between the states themselves that are former colonial states and some semi-colonial states now. And you have contradictions in some cases, like in Saudi Arabia, between the population that's there and the government, particularly in terms of relations with the United States and Israel. If you look at lose all these other terms that are the popular ones and think of it in strategic terms in terms of warfare, you have the populations in the population of the nations around Israel, around Palestine, that are all in favor of protecting the Palestinian people and adamant about this, and now witnessing the worst genocide, certainly since there have been TV cameras to record it in human history, and their governments debating at the United Nations about it, and finally one nation submitting a claim at the ICJ. There are a lot of those contradictions that are going to be resolved over the course of this, whatever conflict. And I think in some of the more reactionary states, you're going to see the governments change, including, I don't mean just the individuals in the government, but the nature of the governments in relation to people change. And that is going to happen under conditions of active warfare, in a number of these states and what they call the State of Israel. And so it's difficult to predict what's going to happen. Other than if some way isn't found to put this fire out and to provide justice and safety for the Palestinian people, it's going to be a bloodbath there.
Daniel Shaw, the Yemeni armed forces continue targeting Israeli-linked ships and vessels bound for the occupied territories, despite the formation of the U.S.-led naval coalition in the Red Sea and Washington's threats and warnings. Tell us more about this defiant message that the Yemenis are sending to the U.S. and its allies, as they've been clear these attacks will persist until Israel ends its crimes against Gazans.
All of humanity has a debt with the Yemeni people, with who we call in the West the Houthis, these forces of resistance. I mean, this is a small country of only 30 million people, and to stand up to empire and their Zionist underlings is extremely impressive. And this is on the heels of over 7 years of a horrific U.S. proxy war of using the Saudis to really wage a campaign of starvation, of horrific bombing against the Yemeni people. This was horrific violence that we almost never learned about here in the United States. And now they're doing the same thing to the Palestinian people. The U.S. has almost single-handedly destroyed Iraq, destroyed Syria through a covert, dirty war. They've dismembered and destroyed Libya. And a big part of the foreign policy establishment wants to Iraqize or Libyaize or Syriaize Iran, one of the strongest countries in the region, and the spearhead of this axis of resistance, which counts among its cadre, the Yemenis, the Iraqi militias, Hezbollah. There's no question that Israel wants every excuse, every pretext to continue bombing the daylights out of their neighbors. But as Mr. Dabar has indicated, there's a half a billion Arab people in the Arab world watching on, 8 billion members of humanity watching this horrific Holocaust of the Palestinian people. So when would Israel ever have peace with its neighbors when for 75 years they've treated their neighbors with genocidal violence?
Sure. Don Dabar, in spite of all the efforts to weaken the resistance in the region, why is the resistance front still thriving?
This is what human beings do. We don't die easily, any of us, as a group, as individuals. It's in our nature to try to live. You know, it's the way this thing is taking shape is an unusual, you know, historically unusual methodology being expressed. It's kind of like at an individual, you know, national or regional level, where you would have a guerrilla war as a, you know, revolutionary spear. Only this is the, you know, falling together of those aspects of the various nation states in the area that see the emergency that has to be addressed, and rolling up their sleeves and you know, going to do it. Any one of these individual states declares war on Israel, the United States, and Israel focus their, you know, whatever the power they have, their militaries on that to make an example of them in front of the others. That's their traditional model. Looking to the Vietnamese war, or the American war, as they call it, in Vietnam, the resistance there was not conventional resistance. And this that we're seeing develop here is an unconventional resistance also, kind of that sort of model that you know, may well produce some unexpected results that they hadn't planned on in the Pentagon or in Langley or wherever whatever rat hole they make these plans on in the so-called state of Israel.
Dan, I shall find a question for you as well. Why is the resistance front still thriving in the region in spite of all the efforts to weaken it?
Ho Chi Minh said no amount of modern